There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Tuesday. Live local talk over the next couple hours. Of course, you're a big part of the show at 343-0106. 343-0106, the phone and text hotline, plus the Let Freedom Ring contest is wide open. Details on our Facebook page, plus we'll talk about that a little bit more throughout the show today. And it is also a Tuesday, and the second Tuesday of the month. That means we get to talk with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, joining us in studio. Before I go any further, though, I'm looking at a picture here. Now, this is on our Facebook page, too, and it said it caused some traffic issues at the Foley Beach Express and Highway 12. The shed, somebody's shed came off the back of a truck. It looks like nobody's hurt or anything, so that's good news. I'm just asking, if y'all are listening and you're involved with this, what kind of deal will y'all give me on that shed? I mean, it came off the truck. It doesn't look perfect. I'm looking for one, so if that's a scratch and dent item, you can contact us here, FM Talk 106.5. Let us know. It looks like the two doors that open on the front. I can't tell how long the shed is, but it looks like it's probably 10 foot wide, if not 8 or 10 foot wide, with the double doors. Looking for a deal here, scratch and dent, if y'all, you know, going to just send me a price on that one. All right, a lot to do on today's show, and good to see Sheriff Cochran in studio. Good to see you.
Glad to be here, Sean.
Lots to do on today's show. I do want to kind of run through a couple of items here as we get started, and then people, of course, have their chance to ask you questions because it's your chance to ask the sheriff, so folks can do that at 343-0106, 343-0106. There's another bite at the apple now on prisons coming up, right? So this bonded idea of prisons. Obviously, you have you live in the world as the administrator of the jail, the system, you know, that you actually have some people that should be in prison that are in the jail now, but you're holding people as they go to prison. What would you do if you were there and you were either executive branch or top of the legislature? The executive branch move did not work with Governor Ivey. The legislature says they're going to try to bond this. What? I mean, you've been in law enforcement in this world for a long time.
Well, I believe the state should bond the prisons. I never thought they should have gone into private ownership or private funding, because that's just a money-making, profit-making thing for those involved, and it fell apart.
And bond rates are pretty good right now.
Yeah, bond ratings are really good, so now's the best time to build it. No doubt the prisons are dilapidated and outdated, so I've always thought they needed new prisons, and they probably ought to build them on existing locations where prisons are at. That takes a lot of political stuff out. The one thing I've always disagreed with that is said is that modern prisons will cut down on the number of personnel required to work them.
That has been told to me by a couple different people in the state. So.
And I just don't believe that's the case, because here's, you know, you do the day-to-day stuff, but when you have a fight or an uprising or a riot, you've got to have enough boots on the ground there in that prison to be able to quell the disturbance quickly.
Okay.
And if you cut down to just a handful of people, well, they may just sit there and watch a fight or riot go on for hours at a time until they can move, corrections officers from another prison over there, or call in the state troopers and stuff. So
it's not this angle that has been told to me by proponents. They said, listen, we're going to build these high-tech prisons. Mm-hmm. It's going to reduce DOC staffing,
mm-hmm.
and we'll make up the money with not so much of the salary. That doesn't seem practical to you.
No. Now, I'll give it that you could probably save some stuff by, you know, better ways of feeding them, more mechanized food kitchens and stuff like that. How do you get the food to the inmates, different things like that. But you're not going to drastically cut down the manpower because you've just got to have sufficient. There are some things that technology will not do. It's got to take a living, breathing human being to be able to execute it.
So, yes, to build the new structures.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But be aware that you're still going to have to staff them.
You're still going to have to
staff them. At a level kind of where we are now.
You're not going to make up the savings to pay for them, I don't think, by building new prisons.
Okay. That's important. Salary. That's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're still believing we need to avoid this federal receivership and build the prisons, but you're saying this whole narrative, which exists, that, hey, this is going to be this big cost savings, you're telling us how it is.
Right. You don't want the federal government to come in and build your prisons for you, because I've seen that with these consent decrees or with police departments across the country, and I've spoken with many of the major city chiefs that have had that forced down their throat. What they do is it kind of turns into a buddy system where the federal courts appoint certain individuals at a high profile that just have their ends to those things, and then they in turn hire all their buddies, and they fly in on these huge expense accounts, charge a couple of $100,000 a year or more for consultant fees, fly in, tell you to do this, do that, fly out, and it just
will
double the cost. I mean, it's a good gig for those guys that do it, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, we don't want to get to that point. Talk about taking the politics out of it. If people haven't followed this, you're talking about building it on sites where they already have prisons. Y'all, if you hadn't followed it, one of the things in the legislature that has slowed this down, too, is if you're somewhere that has a prison and maybe a big place to hire, you know, a lot of jobs there, you don't want to lose that prison.
Right. Some of those legislators, that's their entire economy in their county. And if you move the prison, 500 to 1,000 people lose their jobs, and there goes the economy.
They're fighting to hold
hold what they've got and not lose it. They finally convinced the people this would be good for your county. You know, a lot of counties don't want a prison in their backyard, backyard.
Right, there's a flip
side.
Then
those that have accepted it, you know, that's their bread and butter.
Okay, so building it on facilities as they exist. My only familiarity with, like, the layout of the prison, well, I guess I've seen Tutwiler before, but it's going to be Holman. I mean, that's the one, you know.
Well, you got Holman, you got Fountain right down the street from it.
Right, but that,
so you got two major
those two.
There.
There's a lot of, and I haven't gone and looked at the tax map here, but there's a lot of property around that. That's what I'm saying. I want to talk about that. I don't know about St. Clair County. I don't know how they're laid out up there, but here it seems like there's a lot of land that belongs to the prison there that could be developed.
That's correct. Years ago, and I disagreed with this, the state Department of Corrections started selling off some land. You know, at one time they owned hundreds of thousands of acres of land across Alabama, and they got short and they started selling it, which is I thought was a short-sighted thing to do, because, I mean, land's going to always be valuable, and they used to lease it out for farmland. They used to farm it themselves, and they could continue to be leasing out for farming, but they sold a bunch of it off.
So I need to go back and look. I just know, like, it seemed, and I don't know why I remember, but driving around Holman, that there were the fields adjunct to that were next to the actual brick and mortar, and maybe those aren't. Maybe they don't belong to the DOC anymore or state.
Well,
they sold
some land off over there a few years ago, I remember, but I can't remember how much they sold off.
I just wonder if there's let's say build the facilities there, the new facilities there. You say bond it through the state, bond it. Let's do it this way. Now, what do you see as a hiccup with the legislature? They go into a special session. Do you see anything else holding them back?
Well, I think the move that Governor Ivey took about, if you don't want to support it, I'll do it myself, and I think that opened their eyes, and I watched on the Capitol show, though.
Steve Files?
The head of the Appropriations Committee. He said he felt like there was a wherewithal now for the legislature to get in there and support it, and he's head of Appropriations. I saw where I think he's supposed to meet with the governor this week, the leadership in the respective houses, and she's not going to call a special session unless they've got an agreement.
You know, it's funny, the politics of this being tough on crime and putting bad guys away is popular for politicians to talk about. It's a popular thing. The second half of that is keeping them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be as politically expedient, does it?
Right. Nobody cares what kind of conditions they're in. And unfortunately, people didn't used to care whether or not they were rehabilitated any.
Right.
And now we found out that the majority of them are going to get out of prison. And if you don't rehabilitate them, give them some kind of skill, that they're
coming
back in.
Yeah.
So we've wised up to that, just like I think over the years, many years ago, in law enforcement, we wised up how important education was because the school dropouts were the ones that we were dealing with on the streets.
Now, we're fixing to get into that.
I mean, oh, my gosh, yeah.
We're going to get into something because in my discussions about the Literacy Act, and I started thinking mm-hmm. about things you've told us in the past, and I do want to get into that, but you feel that kind of what you're seeing for your time, that there's enough steam here, do you think, to run this engine for something to get done on prisons before
yes.
the feds come in?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, on your side, mm-hmm. as running the jail, yeah. you've got some of their people in your jail.
I do, but I'm happy to say that in the last 2.5-3 weeks, they've picked up 3 chain gangs. And
good.
So we had a chain gang of 30 and 20, and I think one of either 40 or 50. So
y'all think about this.
We reduced our thing from 450 state inmates down to almost 100 fewer, but we still have 350 probably.
If people
that
hadn't been
in the state penitentiary.
Yeah, explain that again. So if people hadn't followed that.
When they're sentenced to the state penitentiary by a circuit judge so many times, you know, then they send the transcript and it goes up to the penitentiaries. They process it and they say, okay, we've got to get this guy from Mobile County. But they say, nope, we can't accept him right now during this COVID crisis the last year and a half. We can't accept him. So they're still being slowly convicted, being sentenced, but none of them are leaving. And if we bring inmates back from prison to testify in another case, they won't accept them back either.
So if they transfer them here to mm-hmm. be here and they got to go into court and whatever, mm-hmm. then when it's time for them to go back to...
They say, no, don't bring them. We won't accept them.
They are... Y'all understand the difference, what the jail does and what prison does, and
yeah.
they're leaving prisoners in the
And these are some
jail.
Of our worst inmates, too, the ones
How
that
many
need to
did you say at one... How many...
We had
people that should be in prison?
Something at one time.
450 that should be in
should
prison
be in
that were
prison
in your jail.
That we're still in our jail.
But they are reducing it.
They are reducing it now. And I don't know what broke loose, maybe all the different pressure from, I mean, because all the counties across the state were feeling the pressure.
Sure, because you were having to administer that and
mm-hmm.
feed them and all that, and
mm-hmm.
the money had
mm-hmm.
run out, right, for what they were.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're just pushing down on the counties, you know, unfunded mandate, so to speak.
So what I mentioned is thinking about something you had said when we were in this literacy discussion. Now, I'm
yes.
going to probably mess this up, but you had said something akin to the number of kids who could read, and I don't know if it was third grade or what it was, having some kind of corollary to the number of extra prison beds needed in the past. You had just said, like, if you had people who couldn't read, couldn't
yeah.
get an education, that told
well,
you...
Well, they've got statistics that prove that. And of course, the person that... You know, the Literacy Act is a good act, and I can't believe that the legislature wanted to suspend it because all it's doing is helping the third graders. They say if you pass a third grader to the fourth grade and they can't read, they're not going to learn how to read and they're going to dumb down that fourth grade class. They're going to hurt the others. And once a person fails 2 years in a row, they're never going to finish school, the statistics show you. They're going to quit, be dropouts, and then
what's
we'll
the chance of seeing
them.
You? Yeah.
Oh, and then we're going to deal with them on the street corner slinging dope.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've seen this from a law enforcement
yes,
perspective.
Absolutely.
What you're looking at, it's, okay, here's the thing going on in school. Gosh, if that doesn't get done, I'm going to be dealing with them in a law enforcement capacity in the future.
That's right. Now, I did hear, and a spokesperson from the school system, I think, said they're going to really have a lot of summer school.
They do, yeah. So,
thing. Was that on your show?
Yeah. So Renee Phillips was in and talked
yeah.
about these programs they
Something
have.
Like
they're going 60 on right
schools.
Now.
Yeah, yep. that's fantastic because I was told there was several thousand students just completely dropped out. Now they're going to fail, but some of them probably won't even come back to school next year. And there'll be so many of them, we won't be able to go get truancy to pick them up. And that's going to be a huge chunk of a lost generation, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest fail we could do for those children. We failed those children.
Yeah.
We failed the children. Children are innocents. We failed them when we don't make sure they can read and write.
I couldn't understand why the pushback about implementing it this year rather than suspending it. But I found out that the teachers go through a tremendous amount of pressure when they tell a parent, I'm going to have to hold your child back. The parent says, no, you're not, you know,
mm-hmm.
and really resent it. They think, my child can't fail, you know, when in fact, if the parent was wanting to do the best thing for their child, they'd say, yes, I want my child to be taught better and progress properly.
Right. So, and it's the point, you had made it. If that child, I think Renee had said, you know, you go from learning to read to reading to learn
mm-hmm.
when you kind of go third to fourth grade. You
mm-hmm.
know, you've been learning about reading all this
right.
time. Now when you go to the next level, now you use those reading skills, learn history or
yeah.
social studies
yeah.
or science or whatever.
So you can't learn anymore because you never got the skill of reading.
And you're going to, if just as a warning, if those kids drop out, those kids don't get the skills, there's a chance you're going to be seeing those kids. Mm-hmm. And
that's where it all starts.
All right, coming right back, we'll get your questions asked to the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, in this hour for Ask the Sheriff right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1225, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. All right, lots of text here, although there's quite a few here about my offer. Yeah, thank you. So my friend Supermom said, regarding the shed, never let a good crisis go to waste. I'm not trying to take advantage, but there's a scratched and dented shed over there at Foley Beach Express and 12, and I'm just looking for a scratch and dent deal. Carl says, asked a question of the sheriff. Could you ask him if all the flags and bumper stickers with the F word are legal? Like if people have things that, you know, have curse words on them, what's the ruling on that?
I've noticed some of that on boats, but the flags. But I think you're going to get into a freedom of speech thing. And you know, I don't know how at what point it'll stop or go too far. But I think just the words themselves are going to be permissible.
So they are, okay, so there you go. They are permissible.
Yeah, as far as I know.
And that's for flags, T-shirts, bumper stickers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just individual businesses and, you know, companies are the ones that'll have to restrict it on their properties.
So this from Keith says, tell Sheriff Cochran, I was really impressed with the people at the sheriff's office last week. Long story short, they're building relationships with the next generation and may not even know it. The ladies in the pistol permit office, especially, they should be commended for their work and fantastic attitude. I even bought some sheriff's office swag for myself and my daughter. Next time, I'm hoping there are more kid sizes of the team sheriff shirts so I can get her one.
So, great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, those ladies do a heck of a job for us.
This is Dale beat me to one of my questions here, but let him ask it. He says, considering what happened at Fort Morgan on Sunday afternoon, so mm-hmm. We talked about the loss of Officer Smith there in Baldwin County. He said, considering what happened at Fort Morgan Sunday afternoon, how is Mobile County prepared to assist on Dolphin Island for swimming rescue? If flotation devices for rescuers or swimmers, seems like the device used by Baldwin County Deputy could only handle one individual. Is there, and I was going to ask you about that. My note was in the flotilla and the auxiliary. Mm-hmm. For Mobile County Sheriff's Department, what is y'all's relationship with water and that?
We rely on our Sheriff's Flotilla, which is a volunteer group, and they do search and rescue, not really lifeguard rescuing, and we just don't have the manpower to do that. And they coordinate with the Coast Guard, and then, you know, in between us and Baldwin County, they coordinate with the Daphne Search and Rescue as well when somebody goes missing. But we don't have, per se, lifeguards. But I found something very interesting. I don't know enough details to speak properly on Deputy Smith's demise, but I saw just recently down, I think it was Destin or somewhere, where the lifeguards down there had some drones that would fly out and drop a life ring to somebody in trouble in the water. And I thought,
that's
a great idea. And just have two or three drones. Because, you know, if you're a lifeguard, somebody's struggling, you got to get out there to them. Well, yep. That drone, you can instantly fly it out there, drop it right on their head, you know, or right beside them. And somebody desperate is going to immediately grab it, you know. And
that's a fantastic.
So I think that's
a great idea.
That was the best idea I've seen.
And I mean, if you look at the, and I don't know what it takes to, what size drone it takes to lift those, but I mean, like the drone I have, which I don't think could lift. I don't know if it could lift it or mm-hmm. not. But I mean, they're not expensive.
Yeah, drones have really come down in price the last couple of few years. They really have. And so, for something, you know, search and rescue and stuff like that, if you're really going to be involved in that, it seems to be that would be an affordable thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I know that I was taught. I mean, through scouting and on into further classes and certification for life saving. Is the danger of getting close to that drowning person. We were to use an item to get to them, but not let them get hold of you because they're trying to survive and they can push you under at
That's
the same
right.
time
you know that,
and they kill both of you.
Since Fort Morgan is not an incorporated city, they remember a few years ago how the volunteer fire department was inundated all the time with trying to do search and rescue and saving people out of the water, and they were just overwhelmed and couldn't handle. I remember seeing their fire chief say, "We just can't do all this." I suspect that's why Baldwin County SO got involved. And
the difference between it being the town of Dolphin Island Incorporated.
Yeah, can hire some lifeguards, and Orange Beach and Gulf Shores have lifeguards.
All right, coming right back, more of your questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, in the studio. And I want to say, folks, too, that I'm getting questions in here on the text line. We get, like, 30 at a time here. So working through these, Sheriff can tell you, I sit during the commercial break and try to line them all up. So you can ask them, and sometimes it'll be the next segment before we can get to them. So let's go through a couple of these. Unnamed texter says, a question for the sheriff. Why is it that so many people are killed in high-speed chases in Baldwin County, but it never happens in Mobile County? Do you have thorough training, repeated emphasis on safe protocol, zero tolerance for breach of protocol, or what do you do?
Well, I can tell you here at Mobile County Sheriff's Office, we do have extensive training and rules and regulations about when you chase, when you don't chase, and to terminate the chase, and we terminate a bunch of them, and we constantly preach the importance of just not continuing chases to where we don't want to be your mother or sister that gets killed innocently by somebody fleeing. And, you know, some states have gone from not chasing stolen cars. You know, it's kind of a standing joke with me and one of my chiefs that, Miss Sullivan, I want to let you know we got your car, but it's totaled out. It was wrapped around a telephone pole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what have you accomplished when you're chasing a stolen car? So we've got to come out with better ways for high-speed chases. And I've spoke about that at some of the meetings, conferences I go to, and even spoke with some of our federal representatives about, can't you get the federal government to do something for us and create a study group on how to deal with high-speed chases? When I went to the FBI Academy in 1995, that was something that I was focused on back then. And this guy from Science Department of Justice, Science and Technology, at that time the military, or they had created basically like a radar gun that would kill the car, but the problem, electronic ignition, but the problem was it might would kill a couple of cars around it. But that was in 95 they had that. And then they classified,
that's pretty cool.
Then they classified the technology and took it away from the open market. So I know the military.
But there was a thing. I'll use this as a parlor trick.
So
that I know.
I'm saying that they've got to have refined it better to where now you could perhaps put a red dot on the car or something, and then your thing
kills the
shoots
ignition.
Just the one with the red dot and kills the ignition. But even if you took out a couple of cars around that just killed the electronic ignition, it would be better than continuing on with a high-speed chase. Now, let me say this. It'll be coming out in, I think, the next few months. We're testing it right now where the 911 system has bought for all of our police cars in Mobile County a thing that you put in the car, and then you as a citizen can download a free app. And so if we get in a car chase,
this is so cool.
It sends out a signal to anybody within a mile and a half car chase, say, danger, danger, and it lets you know there's a car chase within a mile of where you're at. So you can either pull off the road or just drive slow and be on the lookout. When the car chase gets out of that 1 mile range, then it'll say, okay, you're safe to resume. So
a couple months ago you talked about that, and I was like, I can't wait to download for my wife's phone and
So as Chief Barber says, if we're going to chase them, we need to at least do everything in the world we can to make the public safe.
I would love that. That's public safe word. Say, hey, this is going on in your area. You can stay clear. Because I was going to flip this around for a second, play devil's advocate, and say, when you say you're not chasing people, are you just giving a green light to the criminals to run
from people
you?
Say that. But, you know, there again, we've got to come up with smarter ways to where sometimes you know you're getting ready to get into a chase. Well, you try to avoid it, try to get some other units in place to where maybe you get somebody slowly in front of the car, then slowly behind, and then jam them in. But if you can't jam them in, then it's not necessarily worth the chase. I feel like a chase is only warranted when it's life or death, or, you know, somebody's committed a serious criminal offense, violent offense like murder, or a real dangerous type crime where they've already indicated they'll commit violence on anybody and everybody to get away.
Larry says they have tracking devices that stick to vehicles. I've seen it work. So it's something I guess you would shoot at the vehicle?
Yeah, it shoots and stuck, but they don't have that. The percentage of working is not very high on those things.
This texter says, if you have the driver's info and it's not a violent crime situation, why would you chase somebody anyway? Couldn't you just put a warrant out for their arrest instead of endangering so many people in the officer, innocent bystanders, and the criminal? So,
well, yeah, if you've got the information. Of course, here's something law enforcement suggested we did here in Alabama before this last session was make fleeing from the police a felony. It's only a misdemeanor. So if you've got drugs
really?
In your car, yeah. So if you've got drugs in your car, say, I'm going to run from them until I get these drugs out of the car, and then I'll stop. Well, you know, you write him a ticket for fleeing or something like that. But so it's a good trade-off for him to take the risk.
And this goes back to conversation we had last month when you were on the show. Brian asking about you firing Representative Shane Stringer, who was part of your detachment there at Mobile County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah. Let me say this. I guess you'd say got blown out of proportion, but let me give my statement on constitutional carry. That is not a constitutional, or that is not a legal terminology, constitutional carry. That's a made-up term for people that say you've got a right to carry a gun anywhere and everywhere because of the Second Amendment, and that's just not true.
Without a concealed carry permit.
The courts have ruled, and in the famous court justice that died, the Italian guy, I think he said the right to keep and bear arms is not unlimited. And so courts have ruled that states can have concealed carry laws. So here's the big lie that's been told by some, that we've already had a check done on us, a background check on us, why we got to have a second one. Well, you've not had a background check. The only thing that the federal gun thing checks is whether or not you're a prohibited person from owning a firearm, convicted felon, convicted of domestic violence. It doesn't check and say, hey, has Sean ever been arrested 5-10 times for fighting in bars, all kinds of petty larcenies, all kinds of DUIs, all these different things, several domestic violences that maybe he wasn't convicted of, because they know they appeal to circuit court and then they change it to a menacing non-domestic violence. So then they can continue to have guns. So last year, 2020, we denied 700 people out of 60-something thousand people a permit. Well, those are some of the 700 that want this constitutional carry because they know otherwise, they would not be allowed to carry because they've got a record and a past, and they will put people in harm's way if you let everybody that wants to carry a gun, or let a friend give them a gun right before they get into a fight or something. It's just bad. So I take the stance that I was elected to provide public safety. I'm putting forth my 40-something years of experience, and that's why I'm on that. Now, Shane Stringer specifically. When I hired him, his was an appointment, and quite frankly, you'd call it a political appointment. The sheriff has 5 appointments he makes to create his staff, just like the president makes a couple of appointments. Well, you're going to appoint somebody that's loyal to you and supports your agenda. Shane had been against constitutional carry. In fact, the first year he was in the legislature, he fought it, but he took some heat for fighting it, and then he flip-flopped. And then when he started pushing that agenda, it just was not part of the agenda of the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. So, say fired him or whatever, I unappointed him. I mean, he was in a political position, not a merit system thing. And I just felt
he was there because you
yeah, and he was, I wanted him to subscribe to my things, and I never once tried to tell him how to vote in the legislature. Now, in hindsight, hiring him, and I think I read the Lanyap article, and I don't disagree perhaps with some of the things I think Ms. Trice or whatever said.
Yep.
Political, but you've got other politicians that work for different companies, and you know why they hire them. You've got one that works for Austell's, one of our legislators. Don't you think he's in that job because of where he represents? Sure he is. And so that's what it is. He can go to work somewhere else. I hope he can. He's he's got many years experience, but it's just not part of our agenda.
There we go. This next one, back to the car chases. So what do all these just-let-them-go people think should be done when police catch up with the crooks and he speeds off again? They don't want no-knock warrants. They don't want chases. They don't want foot pursuits.
Oh, that's bizarre, the foot pursuits. And, Chicago, I think, outlawed foot pursuits, because when you have a foot pursuit, there's a high percentage that it may end up in some type of use of force. When somebody's already running from you, they don't want to be caught.
Right.
And they're going to put up resistance, physical resistance, and if they have a weapon, at the last chance to get away, they'll use that weapon. So that ends badly sometimes for the people you're chasing. Car chases, again, that's
You see them differently? I mean, y'all still
Still chase them on pursuit or foot pursuit, absolutely.
Okay.
And bring in the dogs,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the fur missiles?
The fur missiles.
Yes.
And we're very successful with that.
Yeah, y'all are.
If we can just chase them and kind of get them corralled up, then we'll bring the dog in. And but the car chases, I mean, there's no easy answer to that. It's a high-risk situation. And, again, I hope that we can soon answer that with some kind of higher technology, because there's been a tremendous uptick in. And it just pains me every time I see somewhere around the country or around the state of Alabama that someone is injured in a car chase.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's unfortunate. Sometimes it's just a traffic violation to begin with. It may be a stolen car, but you don't know it. It's not.
Right. This texture, the 80-20 rule is why police try to apprehend criminals when they can. 80% of the crimes are committed by 20% of the criminals.
That's probably pretty accurate, but if you got into more severe crimes, you'd probably be able to drop that figure to 10% or 5% of committing the majority of, like around Mobile, it's probably less than 5% of the hoodlums.
You and I have said this. Okay, so
right. Doing the shooting. I mean, they shoot each other, and they have a repeat shooting of each other, and have another repeat until one of them dies. And then the brothers go and shoot the other brothers and somebody else. And there was some big shootout last night on a street where somebody shot a house up, Then, of course, you saw that honeycomb or whatever's mother's house been shot up five times now, and it's just an ongoing war between them.
And this kind of Hatfield McCoy's public safety director, Batista, and I have talked about this a couple times, that it's this, you can almost predict, right? Mm-hmm. It's a shooting of, and then go back, but it's all bad. But the problem is, look at the innocent people. Look at the children that have been getting hit. My tolerance, is zero for it. It's zero for it. But when it's children, it's less than zero.
And see, that's why I'm such a strong advocate of concealed carry. At least we have some restrictions placed on the people. They have a good record, a clean record. They've got, if they've done something really bad, we're not going to give it to them. And that keeps those people from having ready access to guns.
Now, people will turn around before I even look at the text line and say, well, those people don't care about the law, Sheriff. They're going to go get a gun.
They don't, but just the other night I looked in the jail records overnight. There was three or four people charged with no pistol permit and committing other crimes. So that tells you they're carrying the guns, but, at least we have a tool to arrest them. And then they attack the sheriffs. Oh, it's about money. No, it's about public safety. But does the money make a difference? Sure, it does. We bring in $1.4 million a year at the sheriff's office, and that money is spent for law enforcement purposes and training and stuff and equipment. So if they did away with them, I'm going to say, well, you're defunding police. That's what they're essentially doing and blaming the sheriff. So I'm going to say, hey, you're defunding the police.
Well, the amount of that and the whole scope is not what you set up. You inherited
it.
Right?
Exactly. I inherited. I've never pushed for an increase.
And you can't change it.
No.
It has to be the local delegation through Montgomery, right?
That's correct. But rest assured, if they pass that, and any time we have a murder of somebody – and that person had a gun that would have been denied a permit because of his record, but may not have been a felon. I'm going to put that in a news release that this would not have come about, perhaps, had the legislature not allowed everybody to carry guns that shouldn't be carrying guns.
Coming right back, more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
It's Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we'll get to the phones in just one second. I do want to run through one of the texts here, Brian, again, because a lot of this we talked about on last week's show, but we can do a quick version of it. Brian points out, state of Alabama says you have a right to open carry. We've talked about it a lot, and you didn't deny that last time.
Denied that. I was one of the first people in the area 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to say, acknowledge that was the law, that you could openly carry. It's just the concealed carry law says that you can't carry a weapon in a vehicle without having a concealed carry permit. It's just part of the law when it was drawn up maybe 100 years ago.
So, once again, the difference is concealed, like clothing-wise, on bodies.
Carrying concealed, you got to have a permit. Or on your side, it's okay. But so if
vehicle.
If you're a restaurant owner, a nightclub owner, this or that, And say I go out to eat, I was going to say I don't go to bars, but I do go to sports bars occasionally.
Right.
I really would rather not think that everybody in there could be having a gun on themselves without having a pistol permit check behind them. Because when somebody pulls out a gun and starts shooting, some people that are inexperienced, they're going to pull out guns. And next thing you know, everybody's going to be pointing guns at each other and shooting. And you know, well, of course, I, you know, like this guy, the constable the other day that killed himself. You know, we had trouble with that guy for 20 years going back. 20 years we had trouble with that
constable,
guy.
By the way, constable, part of the sheriff's department?
Nope. And no. I've tried to set some standards or eliminate the positions or make him Lewin. He's either the third or the fourth constable that's committed murder.
Yeah, I mean, once again, a lot of this is good Q&A when you come through here. People don't know that. They think constables are not part of the sheriff's department.
No, they're not. They answer to nobody but the people, and they're just a one person in a district.
If they can get elected, you know, if nobody's...
Yeah, 5 or 6 signatures is all it takes for some of them.
Let's go to the phones. Chris is in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sheriff. I'm wondering if you had ever seen that draft for the Mobile County Commissioners for the Second Amendment Sanctuary County for Mobile County. What do you think about that? The state was we thought the state was at that sanctuary, Second Amendment sanctuary law, but they never did. I know there's one other county in Alabama that's a sanctuary county.
Well, you know, I'm familiar with the bill. It says that if I understand the bill and the law, it says that you're not going to allow the federal government to dictate in the state or in the county to enforce certain gun laws. Well, quite frankly, that's not necessary because they can't do that anyhow. But I think it's just for a sign to show that, you know, the legislators are trying to say we support the Second Amendment. We're going to support the right and not let the government, federal government, interfere with it. Because there was a landmark Supreme Court decision, and you probably heard of that Sheriff Mack that became famous because he challenged the federal government several years ago where they tried to get him to enforce something, and he said, I don't have to enforce that, and he took it to the Supreme Court and won.
And won, yeah.
Yeah, and so that made him really famous, but it, you know, that's where a lot of that constitutional carry and stuff came from.
Right, well, this is not about the permit. This just basically prohibits local.
Yeah, yes, course, that's what he's talking about.
State, it's just local. They can't spend the money or enforce federal, the state law. There's no state law saying they have to enforce.
That's correct.
Any of those gun laws.
That's correct. So they can't tell us, and I think that was mostly for a symbol to show that and reinforce that belief. But we already know that we don't have to. And you know, the flip side of that kind of cuts both ways. You know, we wanted to enforce illegal immigration as state and local people, but we couldn't do it, and the federal government wouldn't do it. And we're seeing all these illegals coming across our territory, and so then they had either a 284 program where they could train state and local, and it never really got off the ground that much. Senator Sessions, I think, sponsored that, but it's sort of similar. But that's the flip side. But yeah, I'm not opposed to sanctuary cities, but at the same time, if
first Second Amendment,
yeah,
before
Second
you get
Amendment,
quoted
yeah.
by somebody on this show,
yeah. I'm not opposed to that, and have no intention of you know, trying to enforce or take up weapons from somebody that, you know, sometimes ATF is overzealous on stuff, and I'm not going to do their bidding.
All right, Chris, appreciate the call. Let's go to Mike in Point Clear. You're on next. Hey, Mike.
Thank you. First of all, Sheriff Cochran, I really appreciate your service. We all do.
Thank you.
You do a wonderful job, even though I'm in Baldwin County.
Sure.
I totally agree that and I'm a concealed weapons carrier. I totally agree with doing a background check on concealed weapons carry.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that the money is being used for the sheriff's department and being used for their equipment and their maintenance. I am a big proponent, Second Amendment proponent, but at the same time, I like the fact that you're doing a background check, and I think that's important when other states look at the reciprocity in the state of Alabama to 26 other states, that they know that there's some kind of background check for concealed weapons carry.
Yeah, and let me piggyback on that. In the state of Alabama, over 50% of the counties don't report the mental illness commitments to the National Instant Background Check. So, you know, they would be prohibited people from even owning or buying a gun, but it's not reported, so they can do it. And so then if you didn't have the concealed carry, where we catch those things, because we check our when we do a records check on you at the sheriff's office, we hit our database of those people that we've had to go pick up for probate court. So we catch them, and then a lot of small municipalities, they don't report their arrests to the state, and therefore the state don't report them to the federal government, such as domestic violence convictions and things like that. So all those people are getting through the cracks unless you have a concealed carry background check.
Well, I like the idea of actually having some cross-referencing on some medical records. Eventually, we're going to have to get over that bridge, because if you want people to be safe, you're going to have to turn loose of something to a certain degree to be able to make sure that that cross referencing occurs.
That's exactly right. You're right on point.
Appreciate the call. I'm going to run out of time this hour, so I just want to read. There's a ton of text here, but I want to read this one here. Unnamed texter says, I'm a proud gun owner. I used to work in a pawn shop and sold guns to the public. I've always said that the Second Amendment fanatics, and let me stop here so people know, I'm probably one of those people, said that Second Amendment fanatics would support some sort of reform if they saw all the people who walked out of the doors with a gun. So that he, for years at the pawn shop, I guess, was selling them, and he said he might support reform if they saw who walked out with the gun. So,
yeah, yeah. That's exactly right, because, you know, you buy from individuals and stuff at the gun shows, you know, you don't know who you sell to. But a good rule of thumb, and a lot of people do it, is they make sure whoever they're selling a gun to has a pistol permit. So they're kind of, you're reducing any kind of knowing that they may have sold it to the wrong person.
As always, we appreciate your time on the show. If people want to get more from the sheriff's office, how do they do it?
They can go to our website, www.mobileso.com, like us on Facebook, follow Team Sheriff, follow us on Twitter, and... just if you got something to report to us, you can do it anonymously on our website.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you, Sean, and enjoy to all you listeners.